Hailing frequencies open, and welcome to Star Trek Discoverage, the live podcast that boldly goes into excruciating detail about this week's episode of Star Trek Discovery. I'm your host, Aaron Coker, a.k.a. Caliban, and I can't wait for Times Arrow 3 when they find Arium's head under San Francisco. That joke is courtesy of former show guest Thad Haight. Personally, I'm getting sick of living in past tense part zero. Joining me on the show, as usual, is my co-host. She's also the co-host of the Generations Geek podcast, a more or less family-friendly celebration of geekdom. It's Ella Pearson. Ella, welcome back to Discoverage. It's great to have you here in this, the 17th week of 23 weeks of Trek. And what I want to know is, how was your Thanksgiving? Yeah. That's great. Yeah. Wow. Yeah. Can COVID go through a screen door? That's what I need to know. yeah, well, that's how you do that. I'm okay. I'm doing okay. I also didn't get to really, see my family. My family lives out of, state. And so, it was not something that we could make happen, but we made up for it with 3 hours of Zoom calls. As you would do, of course. On one side of the family, it was an extended family call. So there was like 14 people on the Zoom call. And then on the other side of the Zoom call, or on my side of the family, just my mom and dad. So everybody's doing okay and a lot to be thankful for as we, try to close out this, this horrible year that we've been in. Oh, really? That's cool. Yeah. Well, let's move on to a little bit of news before we talk about the episode. I wanted to mention, just coming on to some sad news, that Herb Solo has passed away at the age of 89. And if you're not familiar with who Herb Solo is, he was one of the executive producers on the original series of Star Trek. And one of the guys that basically brought the show to life and made it what it is. And he worked at Desilu and was one of the just one of the main guys who getting shows on the air. So Desilu's kind of famous shows, Mission Impossible, Mannix, and whatnot. He was responsible for getting them on the air. And I he wrote a book about his sort of remembrances of the time that he was working on Star Trek called Inside Star Trek, which is a really interesting look at TV production in the 60s and the kind of struggles that they had in getting the show on the air. Yeah. And, you know, he lived to like 89. So, I mean, it's, you know, it's too bad. He had a good run. But from everything that I've heard, just a really nice guy. And, yeah, he will be missed. But there is more news. I don't know if it's good news, maybe bad news, but it looks like Simon & Schuster has finally been sold. Viacom CBS has been looking to sell the publishing wing of their business as soon as right after they merged, and they are have been sold to Penguin Random House, another major publishing company. Like they'd already been sold? I don't know. Sorry, I'm just dealing with some technical issues here in the show feed. But they had not been sold. As soon as Viacom CBS had merged, they had basically put out their intent to sell the wing, the publishing wing. saying that, you know, they wanted to be in the streaming business and not the publishing business. And so a couple months ago, they announced that they had put that up. But it's now been confirmed that Penguin is going to buy Simon & Schuster for $2 billion in a cash deal.
Wow. And what do we think that means for the future of Star Trek print fiction?
Well, as you probably know, I have a lot of friends who are in the Star Trek publishing business, and watching their social media feeds has been an interesting experience. I think that probably the most bullish take on it is that, you know, it's good that you wouldn't want the publishing part of the company to be with a company that doesn't want to do books. Do you know what I mean? Like, you want it to be...
Yeah, I feel like Penguin still does.
Oh, yeah.
So
yeah.
Much.
And Penguin has to, because they are, like, now one of four major publishers. Like, the publisher, you know, Penguin Random House is only Penguin Random House because in 2013 they merged with Random House. So, mm-hmm. As long as the publishing business is still going and people still want Star Trek books, you know, there's going to be Star Trek books. You don't have to own... you own the IP, they don't have to own the publishing as well. So I think that theoretically it doesn't have to affect anything, but of course in reality it will almost definitely affect something, and we'll see what that the effect of that is as we move forward.
Some trickle
here.
Down coming up.
Yeah, we'll see, but fingers crossed. We know that there are a lot of books coming out in the future, books by Cassandra Rose Clark. I think Kirsten Beyer's got a book on the way. David Mack. So there's plenty of Star Trek books coming out still. So don't expect those to stop anytime soon.
I don't expect those authors to stop anytime soon. Let's
no,
say that.
No, they'll be writing no matter what.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, tonight we've seen the seventh episode of Star Trek Discovery, Season 3, called Unification 3, and we're here to break it down for you. And before we start, as always, we're setting a course for the Spoiler Zone listeners, so be warned, we're glad you decided to join us. But if you haven't seen the episode, spoilers are incoming. The official synopsis for Unification 3 is, while grappling with the fallout of her recent actions and what her future might hold, Burnham agrees to represent the Federation in an intense debate about the release of politically sensitive but highly valuable Burn data. This episode was written by Kirsten Beyer. Kirsten is a writer and producer for both Discovery and Picard. She's written a number of episodes for both shows, and she's written 12 Voyager pocket novels. This episode was directed by John Dudkowski, and if that guy's nickname isn't Dude, then I don't know what. Nothing makes sense in this world. This is John's first directing credit. He's a graduate of USC Film School and has worked previously as an editor on Star Trek Discovery, as well as shows like The Umbrella Academy, The Man in the High Castle, and Fringe. No star date for this episode, but we do know, of course, the date is 3189. Here's some facts from the memory banks about the episode. This is the first episode to be numbered as the third in a multi-episode story in Star Trek, and it's the first to continue that numbering from another series, in this case, Unifications 1 and 2 from TNG's fifth season. We, of course, see the Kuat Malat again in this episode, as represented by Gabrielle Burnham. The Kuat Malat were introduced, of course, in Picard. And Navarre, the new name for Vulcan, literally means to form, and it was an art form practice on Vulcan in which a subject was examined from two different viewpoints, or by viewing the two different aspects of its nature. Navarre was a term coined around 1967 by linguist Dorothy Jones, who wrote the Dorothy and Myfanwy series of Star Trek mm-hmm. stories for the fanzine T-Negative in the late 1960s and early 70s. And the name was previously used for the name of a Vulcan starship in the Enterprise episode Shadows of Pajem. So it is a term that has been floating around Star Trek fandom, at least, for a long time. Let's scan for new theories quick before we move on. And I think the first thing we probably have to talk about is, who had Tilly? Tilly on the poll for new officer. Who had Tilly? Because it's a huge payout. Anybody have it?
I think it was you. Was it you?
No, I didn't. Come on.
It wasn't me.
No, I don't think either. I don't think anybody did. Did you even consider that that could be a possibility?
It just seemed so, like, I feel like her name popped up in my head, but it seemed so far-fetched.
Yeah.
That I was like, oh, no, like, they wouldn't, would they? They wouldn't, would they? Would they do that? But I also feel like him being, like, do you think he means by, like, oh, temporary you know, for serving first officer until I find a permanent replacement. Is that code for, like, maybe I'll just have an ensign being the first officer? Or is that, like, this will be a very good experience for Tilly, and in the meantime, I'll get to figure out who the heck is going to, you know, be my number one?
I don't know. I've got a lot of different sort of thought trains going on it. I mean, first of all, I think, yeah, I mean, obviously it's really unlikely you wouldn't say, you know, get up, Riker, and Wesley, stick your narrow butt in that chair. You're my guy. I mean, you wouldn't do that. But at the same time, you know, Wesley was an exceptional young person, and he, you know, was given a lot of opportunities in the flagship. He was, I know he was kind of a legacy because of his dad, but like he was, you know, made an ensign and then was given a lot of responsibility. So I don't think it's totally unprecedented. There's also the side of like, if I was Mary Wiseman and they didn't do something like that, I'd be like, can we just kill me off? Because I haven't really done a lot on this show. You know, I feel like Tilly was really pushed as a exciting new character in the first season and hasn't had a whole lot to do since then. So I think it is, we've definitely been hunting for a storyline or something for her. And going off of that, part of her storyline is that she wants to be a captain. And, you know, they have hooked up with Starfleet now in the 32nd century. So I guess that's possibly still on the table, but we haven't seen anything going forward with that, with all the action and the running around that we've been doing. So I don't know, maybe like you said, maybe it is an aspect of that, and it isn't necessarily that she's gonna have the position permanently or she's gonna get a bump to lieutenant commander or something, but it is like it's her on the job training. Do you know what I mean? Like we are, you know, we're a ship that is sort of serving, you know, at the pleasure of a way more advanced Federation. So maybe this is a protected position where we're in the school parking lot. So sure, you can drive kind of thing.
It's also like, it's going to be way more interesting to watch her as a character, like try to be a leader and also try to lead people who are, you know, much older, more experienced than her versus like, if we threw her like a promotion.
Yeah.
You know, it'd be like a nice little heartwarming moment. And then, nothing after that, you know what I mean? And so having her do this is like a way that we can really watch her grow as a character versus like, I don't know what's directly above ensign.
Lieutenant junior grade.
Like then it's just, then they just call her Lieutenant Tilly and nothing really would happen. You know what I mean? Like this is much more exciting overall.
Yeah. Well, and I mean, that's Discovery, I think, tends to say, well, if we're going to do something, let's just do it. Why wait around? I'd imagine that I thought it was interesting because I was thinking about like what I know this is a show where everybody loves each other, but what would be like the real reaction of the bridge crew in this case? Like, oh, great.
Yeah, like what the heck?
Good for you. But they made sure to in her little their little celebration party, like they made sure to like, oh, what do you think about this, Bryce? You know, like what do you think about this, Nelson? Everybody's Demmer. Like, no, you can do it. Yeah, you can do it. So, hopefully that'll be a positive thing and we'll see how she handles that going forward. I feel like we'd put the question of what, you know, what is the burn on the side burner, so to speak. But the show has picked it up now and we're running with it. So it looks like we might see what the origin of the burn was or get a bigger reveal. So, you know, let's last chance to guess what the cause of the burn is.
Somebody, now I'm forgetting the number. Section 36?
Section 31? There might be a Section 36.
There's so many.
Department 49?
What if it's them? I just had that thought right now. What advantage would that be? Never mind.
There might be... There might be some. I agree with you that I think that somebody... Somebody has to be behind it, right?
Like, we have to have a new, like, big bad?
That, or there just has to be a motivation for... I mean, if it could be something natural, but that's not... I don't think dramatically that pays off. You know, that doesn't pay dividends in the future. So it has to be somebody who is trying to sabotage the Federation or is against their unity. That would be my guess. I think the Emerald Chain seems kind of obvious. but somebody who would have the same level of like disdain for the Federation, or would benefit from, you know, wiping out the Federation or limiting travel.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe Q. Maybe Q's back, and he's like, "You guys, you've had 1,000 years. You've not figured anything out. So nobody flies around anymore."
Yeah, I don't. I feel like, I mean, they're gonna have to reveal a villain. So I mean, maybe it will be the Emerald Chain, and that'll be the whole thing. But there's a couple glimpses of Orion's in the next episode.
Yes, our smooth boys are definitely coming back in the next episode. Clay. So. I guess they would be relatively high up on the list there. Well, let's get into talking about the episode itself. And I don't think that they didn't show Gabrielle Burnham in the previews, did they?
Not at all. I don't
they
think
did a pretty
so.
Good job of hiding her return. Yeah, I didn't think that I wasn't expecting her to come back.
Me neither. Honestly, I'm a little surprised. Also, like, am I the – is a human just allowed to, like – were they like, yeah, come on, join the, you know, the samurai nuns? Like,
yeah, I guess. I mean, she's got a great story. All... You know, she's like, look, I've been flipping around in time for God knows how long. You know, you want honesty, I'll tell you whatever you want to know. I had to leave my daughter, but I'm spending my whole life trying to protect her. There's robots that live in the future that want to kill us all. What? I'll tell you anything. Here's some absolute candor.
Yeah, for real. It's kind of weird. I mean, I don't know. I guess just thought it was a little odd. Like, why wouldn't her mom look? I guess we don't know how long her mom has been. Maybe her mom was in the future for a long time and was like, I'm going to, you know, this is the best path for me now versus like continuing to search for my daughter forever. But
that was one of the things about having, like, I think an abrupt return was probably the way to go. But when you do that and then we go right into this. We don't get any like explanation because we don't really know where she ended up, and we don't know, didn't she have like a angel suit? Like, you know, is that somewhere or how did she end up on, Navarre? And yeah, there's a lot of unanswered questions, which, I mean, I guess they don't really matter ultimately, but, you know, she'll send him in an email to Michael later, I guess.
Yeah. Just a quick update. Here you go. Here's the, you know, spark notes.
Yeah, right.
So far. I feel like I was a little, this is maybe mean, I was a little excited. Like, I was very intrigued when, you know, the president was like, oh, someone has taken a special interest in you. I think that you'll feel the same way. I was like, oh my God, who is it going to be? And then when it was her mom, I was kind of like, oh, you're here? Like,
yeah.
But I, you know, I mean, obviously it's like, she's the only person who could have brought that stuff out and Michael, I think.
Yeah, well, I mean, yeah, that's all. Yeah, that's why she was there. But I ran through every character still in the wind in my head, you know, and I didn't even think about Gabrielle Burnham.
Me neither.
So yeah, so they got us. Good one.
Mm-hmm. It's pretty cool. Like, I don't know. It's cool to see her like in a different way, kind of like she's obviously, you know, she has more candor. She's like a much different person. It's interesting to see that. But it's also that moment between her and Michael where she was like, you always know where to find me. It was like very sweet. That's like exciting, especially as we like follow this like storyline, I feel like, of Michael like trying to figure out who she is and like find a home. It's like sweet. So it's like, oh yeah, my mom's like on Navarre.
Yeah. That's a good, because I was thinking like when they introduced the Kuat-Malat in Picard, my thought initially was like, oh, what it'd be cool if like a Section 31 agent, you know, or like an intelligence agent just had like a moment of clarity or just some kind of breakdown and like just decided to join like a society that just tells everything all the time, like no secrets, like they'll tell you whatever. And, you know, instead of doing that.
Join.
Yeah, right. Right. But that's already kind of what they are, because the Romulans are, you know, sort of like that in their society. Mm-hmm. And so, yeah, I think it was a good matchup with Gabrielle in, you know, we see her a couple times and it's all, I can't tell you this. I can't tell you that. I can't change the timeline. I can't, you know, you just have to trust me. And, you know, finding a place where she can just sort of go, I don't have to do that anymore. I'm just going to be totally honest about everything. That makes a lot of sense.
Yeah, well, she's way less, like, chaotic, too, that way. You know what I mean? Like, especially, like, with Michael. Like, she's not as, like, oh, I've seen terrible things you wouldn't imagine. Wanna... She's like, what's up with you? Why do you seem weird? You know, it's nice.
Yeah. She looks good. She looks healthy. Yeah. We find out about the SB19 project in this, which the Romulans / Vulcans were working on. Didn't come up with like a species name, like the Rom Vulcans or a couple name, did they? They're just, I wonder what they call themselves, if anything. But yeah, they've been working on this project. Yeah, Nabarians, maybe.
I feel like there's still too much, like.
They're still working on it.
Yeah, no one's settled enough to be like, oh, yes, we are one people. They're all still like, yeah, you have things on your head, you know?
Yeah, and I like that, like, I mean, there's always a lot of exposition in this show, but, like, there's some very specific exposition when Admiral Saltanpepa is telling Burnham and Saru about, like, everything that's happened, like, since they've gone. And, of course, they weren't in Balance of Terror. They don't know that the Romulans even look like Vulcans, presumably. So it's just, the look on Michael Burnham's face was great because she's just like, what? What? Ellen, you didn't. Yeah, there's, like, all this stuff that she just doesn't know. I got the impression that their project seemed like a wormhole type project. Like, there's a little graphic of a ship flying into what looks like a wormhole. Somehow it operates similarly to the spore drive in that you transport instantaneously wherever you're going.
I mean, I feel like that's, I feel like that's the way things are heading. I mean, they're developing the spore drive, so I feel like that was the way things were heading. Is like, if, it's like if the Federation is developing these spore drives, then, like, somebody else is developing something similar. You know what I mean? Like, because...
Yeah.
Are you going to travel any faster than warp and, something might happen to your freaking squishy bodies.
I wonder what their research or what the technology pertains to that they would think that it could be a possible cause, for the burn. I wonder if, however it links to subspace or dilithium or something like that, how it runs up against like dilithium science, that they would go, oh, I think that we caused this thing.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know. I feel like I'm still so confused about, like, I feel like we've only ever known dilithium as, like, this, like, one thing. And, yeah, it can, like, explode, but, like, something has to happen to it. And so, like, trying to problem solve, obviously, which is, I'm sure why Michael is so intrigued, but trying to problem solve, like, why it all went wrong at the same time. I don't even know how to – it's like, you're right, if that's, like, a wormhole thing – is there dilithium involved? Like, what does dilithium do that, like, we didn't know about in the past? Is there some other property of it that they just, like, didn't know about? And then something, snapped. And, I mean, I guess that's just the big question of the season.
Yeah. And also, I think it's a little, I think it's a little unbelievable that, like, Discovery is the only ship or only set of people to think, like, well, let's check everybody's watches, like, what was the time of death on all these ships? But they come up with this theory based on when, the burn hit all these ships. And it's like a real good, it's a real good argument for, like, synchronized chronometers. Like, everybody, make sure we're all on Greenwich time here. Everyone so watches, if there's yeah. ever a galaxy-wide explosion, we know what happened.
There's got to be some weird, like, dinky section of the Federation that's, like, in, like, a basement, if you can have a basement in space, that's, like, just cardboard boxes of files, you know what I mean? Just being like, how'd this happen? But some, nobody cares about it.
Lieutenant Junior Grade Fox Mulder is still working on this. He's like, no, look, you check out my board. Yeah, my yarn wall.
He's like, I made you a quick PowerPoint. If you could just watch it, there's animations. And I'm really saying that. But no.
I wonder if there's an area of the universe or the galaxy maybe that that this didn't affect. Like, if there were, ships inside of a particular nebula, or in a certain region of space where the burn didn't affect them. I don't know.
And like if they were just so far out that they didn't have contact with Starfleet anyways?
They had tinfoil around their warp core, so it protected it. Mm. So the main action of this episode, of course, is this T'Kal Maquette, which is kind of like a high-stakes thesis defense, where she's got – it's like a law case or like – I got flashes of Debate Club where they have to sort of go back and forth over this thing. And it'd be tough to write something like this. I don't know if I was totally sold on it because I think it's cool how Michael Burnham just goes, well, I can do this, no problem. And she goes in there and she's got like nothing. And the main guy, I can't remember his character name, but he was really good. He just starts cutting her up like immediately. And then she's like,
ripped into her.
Well, don't we have to, we need to get together because that's an emotional argument. That's invalid. And just boom, 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 boom. And she takes all of her things out one by one.
I also feel like she's a Gryffindor, you know what I mean? Like she had some science and logic, and like, you know, she has that part of her like from growing up on Vulcan. But I also feel like, yeah, it's very Michael to be like, well, here I go, you know, just like when they bring up the mutiny, it's like, well, here I go, you know, and I'm like, she just makes that decision and she's like, and then she is just 100% all in.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, that's totally part of her character. What did you think about, speaking of like her character and what's going on, like what'd you think about the sort of, I'm not sure if it's premature enlightenment or if she really means it, but her coming down on the side of, no, I'm staying. This is Discovery's my home. This is where I need to be.
I was glad. I was worried at the first half of this episode. I was like, oh my God, Aaron was right. She's gone. She's going to leave. But I don't know. I think it's more interesting to like, I don't know how much growth and maybe this is just me. I don't know how much growth I would really see in her if she decided like, the Federation just isn't for me, you know, this thing that I've dedicated my entire life to and like wanted to be in, like, I just, it's not for me because sometimes I make these like decisions that aren't right. Or it's difficult for me to like have an authority above me. Like, I think it's more interesting to see her like learn what the Federation means to her, if that makes sense, especially after everything she went through after the mutiny and learning from that and like coming back into just like her confidence as an officer and like being good at her job, you know what I mean? And learning that it's not always, you know, obviously it's not always being in the Federation isn't always about like your specific interests. Like when she wanted to go, obviously she disobeyed them, but like wanting to go after Book, but she also didn't want to go to Navarre in the first place. And she, you know, obeyed the order. So I don't know. I think I'd just be disappointed in a couple ways if she had left. But it is going to be weird to see what they do about Book. It feels very like, oh, you know, my boyfriend's ship is just taking up our entire, you know, butt end. But
I don't know if it was. I'm not sure that Discovery has yet nailed the shorter, like the 13 to 15 episode seasons, because like before when they were just standalone stories, you didn't have to worry really about an arc. I think that Picard, one of the things that Picard did well is that it got that it was like a 10-hour movie, but the way that like the sort of smaller arcs sort of move and develop and complete is I'm not sure that it fits like what they're trying to tell. I guess I'm dissatisfied by them. Like, cause this is basically the halfway point, you know, of the season. So if this is like on the, you know, the story graph type thing, is this the point where she says, no, I'm going to get rid of dissension. I'm going to get rid of my doubts and I'm going to go 100% Starfleet. And we see where that goes and where that takes us. Or is this like a premature enlightenment where she's like, I am Starfleet. And then a series of, you know, a road of trials or something like that will shake that faith. Like, I don't know, because I feel like they just kind of sold Book short, because his arc should be, oh, great, you're going to stay. I got to get out of here. Come on, Grudge, let's get out of here. And instead, he's just like, oh, great. And it's like, well, I mean, it's okay for him to have like to be upset with that, you know, or to have an arc too. So I kind of, it seems like they wanted to just end this episode with like, everything's great and we're going to move on from here, and didn't leave anything dangling, which I don't know. It's a choice. Something that I found fascinating was that she, I think it sucked that we didn't get to see Vulcan or Navarre, I guess, in this, like the whole franchise has gone to Vulcan, like, half a dozen times in its existence, you know, let's just give us something. But she gets to go to Vulcan finally after all this time and doesn't do a great job with the logic. And then Burnham just, her mom comes out and just kind of says, She thinks she's a Vulcan. She's not. You know, she's a human, 100% through and through. And I wonder if – I feel like that's always been hanging over the character because you always I always expect her to be, you know, acting in this kind of logical way. And she doesn't really. And I don't – I think that that's one of those things that she would put on her resume, like, oh, yeah, I'm kind of a Vulcan. But maybe she can finally wipe that off and go, I don't have to worry about that. I don't have to, like, act towards any standard. Sarek's dead. He's been dead for 1,000 years. I can finally be my own person. You know, I think that it's a good – thing ultimately for her to realize that, yeah, I'm not a Vulcan, don't worry about it.
Yeah, I mean, she's definitely like been grappling with that for so long. I feel like it's like hard. I imagine it's a very important part of her, you know what I mean? And so
yeah,
I mean, if I grew up, let's say, I don't know, if you grew up in like a different country but you weren't born there, like, or like you had, you like, you know, like Michael, but you know, you grew up in like Russia or something and then you come back to America, it's like you'd still feel, if you were in Russia from like ages 12 to, you know, 22 or whatever, you'd be like, oh, I'm kind of Russian, but like I never really, like, I don't know how to describe it, but well,
I got a good one for you. I was in band and in choir in high school, but also before that, like I played music and sang and did all this stuff. And then I got out of college and there's just nowhere, unless you join your, you know, church's orchestra or band or choir or something like that, or you start a band on your own, I haven't had any place to really ply my musical trades unless it's karaoke night. So I still think of myself as like a musician or as a music person. But to be honest, like I haven't like picked up an instrument in like a long, long time. And it's not like if I had a tension where I was kept thinking like, oh yeah, I should start a band, and you know, and the the time, you know, I keep saying that and it never happens, that'd be one thing. But instead, personally, I've just decided, well, that's something I used to do and I don't necessarily do it anymore.
Yeah. But you know, maybe that's why she makes all those, you know, Gryffindor decisions, is she's like, oh, I don't have to, I'm a human too, and I will.
Right. Yeah. Yeah.
Now I'm a mutiny.
Would a Vulcan do this? Jumps off a cliff.
Oh, yeah. I don't think so. Yeah. I have a tinfoil hat to put on.
Sure.
And I want to say it before I forget. So obviously they've been gone for many, many years of Discovery. They're back. We're worried that Michael is going to leave the Federation because she's Michael, whatever. Admiral Salt-N-Pepa, let's say we're looking for a source of the dilithium. Let's employ a metaphor, a simile.
A colorful Hydra metaphor?
Shield.
A shield?
Like Hydra and Shield, like in Marvel, when you realize that like the bad guys have slowly infiltrated like the good guy organization until the point where basically everybody in the organization is a bad guy. Okay. So like, let's say the bad guys blew up all the Federation ships and then kind of became what we're seeing in Disco now as the Federation. So what I'm leading up to is maybe they figure out that the Federation just isn't really the Federation anymore. And they don't really want to fix the whole dilithium thing. Like, they're, I don't know, they have something else going on. Maybe the whole ship will leave. You know?
And just,
maybe
and just bug out like, of the Fed. Yeah.
Yeah. Because they can just jump. You know what I mean? If they had to leave. It's not like the Federation would
catch
them.
Yeah, what are they going to do? Yeah, let's try Andromeda. Yeah, right. Jump.
Yeah, exactly. And like, do their own, like, savior things out in the universe. That's work better for Michael as a character. You know, they're still struggling with the Federation as it is now. I don't know.
The thing about, setting yourself up or setting your storyline or your show's identity up as a exploration of identity is that, like, when does it stop? Do you know what I mean? Like, if there was one season of TNG where Picard had to, for some reason, they had to take the ship like way out of the Federation and come back and go, I don't recognize this anymore. We have to decide whether we're going to, you know, be Federation or not. But like the show is just like, it's always like, we're Starfleet. We got to, you know, the first, we're going to do war crimes in the first season. It's like, no, that's not what we're about. And we're going to be controlled by robots in the second one. That's not what we're about. And so this is like the ultimate question of like, you know, what is it that we're about? And it's dark. It'd be a choice. But yeah, I could see them like hacking the computer and going, wait a minute, the person that caused the burn was Salt and Pepper. It's like, that's right. That's right. I did it. And I'm glad that I did it.
His silhouette's in the doorway. They turn around.
Whoa, that incredibly tall silhouette wasn't Saru, it was him. Yeah, I could see something like that. Sure. Put that on the board.
You know, he's a little sus.
He is. But why is he sending them out to, is it one of those things where it's like, I never thought you'd actually solve the puzzle. You guys are a bunch of cavemen, but you did.
I mean, maybe he, you know, maybe he wants that data from Navarre.
Yeah, we gotta get
he's
that
like,
data.
I don't care. I don't care what you figure out about. He's or maybe you know he's very confident they won't figure out the burn, like you said. He's like, yeah, go get that data for me. Why don't you go get that? Why don't you go make nice with Navarre and I'll wait here.
I guess, boy, I'm worried about Saru in that scenario.
Yeah,
because he has really gone like. Sure, it's you know it's not like a he didn't sell a soul or anything, but he's captain now and he's gone all in on the the future Federation. He did a really great job this episode, I thought, because you know this is like the first contact with Navarre in like you know 100 or 2 years,
and he was feeling it.
And he really was. And he's not like a super. I mean, he's got his own logic, but he's not up to like Vulcan logic, and so. He also, I think he's got to be a Gryffindor too, right? Because he just kind of goes right in on it, and he's just being so respectful to the Vulcan president. But she's also kind of shading him a little, and he's like, okay, well, let's look at this. And he's like, what about this? She's like, well, that's not it, one trip isn't going to fix everything. And he's like, yeah, that's true. Okay. He's just being super diplomat.
I know it was so fantastic to see him do something that like. I feel like a normal Starfleet captain would have to do is like weird, tactful diplomacy like that with like a planet with like, a, you know, the president and see him be so like, well, I'm not going to push her, but I'm going to ask her. She knows that I'm new. So I, you know, would like to learn. And then, oh my God, when he was sitting next to her during the, you know, the trial and just kind of looked at her. That was so funny. Like,
yeah.
Yeah, it's really
playing just
very, I feel like
playing just a little bit dumb, like you know, just like
oh,
sure, you tell me. Okay. Mm-hmm. Oh, interesting. Okay. Yeah. Yeah, that was good. But
like,
if he finds out that
scenes are like
if he finds out that
far between.
I wish that we were getting a little more from him, but if he finds out that Admiral Salt and Pepper betrayed him. Oh no.
He's gonna, then what? Now what?
He's gonna shoot spines.
War? Yeah. He said, but in the scenes, and obviously, you know, Doug Jones is such, I mean, a beyond amazing actor, but like in those scenes, he's like, you know, the character and the acting is just like so phenomenal. He's really such a standout.
Yeah, I definitely agree. Pretty much covered a lot of stuff. Anything that we haven't covered that you want to talk about?
We didn't touch on the Yelkin, the Yelchin. No, I don't know. Tilly
said Yelchin. That's right. Yeah. I mentioned the USS Yelchin.
That was so sweet.
It was a nice nod to Anton Yelchin. I think it must be that we're just. I'd imagine that a lot of these ships are some letter of the alphabet at this point, right? Like it's got to be like it's probably the Yelchin G or something like that. But you just call it the Yelchin.
But, you know, how many ships does the Federation have now? Like, 3.5?
3, yeah, 3.5. One's in the shop. Plus. Yeah, they have the Nog, Voyager J, yeah, and now Disco, yeah.
They're like, there's no, they don't have, you know, like a number afterwards. It's just Discovery. They're like, it's not Discovery B. Please.
Well, it's the Discovery A now, isn't it?
I guess it would have to be.
Yeah. With its,
I also feel like at this point, you know, like you said, we're like halfway through.
Yeah.
So I feel like maybe they were like, okay, halfway through, nice little, whew, little breather. Michael, you know, isn't the man she's with isn't manipulating her. And now I think maybe the next half and or even just the next episode is where things are going to pop off.
Yeah. This is the best boyfriend that she's had so far.
Oh, by far. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, Book might be a little flat so far as a character, but he is a nice guy, though.
He is such a nice boy.
And that's why that I still can't believe that they didn't, do anything during their year. But maybe then that explains why she has taken to him so quickly, because there was all kinds of Hoxian like tension between them, but we just didn't see it. And this is the resolution. Now it's like, I did it. You want to go to bed? Yeah. There's,
She also, I mean, if maybe was holding herself back a bit, if Discovery had come back 2 years later, she was alone for like a year.
Oh, right? It would have been like, on.
Then
yeah.
Maybe. Yeah. But a year, she's still kind of like, I don't know quite what's going on yet. But now that she's like kind of settled, she's like, all right, let's go.
It's been 364 days and on. Oh, wait, I'm getting a call. Hold on. Okay. Yeah. Well, I think that's pretty good. I think we covered just about everything. So we're going to call it for this week. And thank you for joining us, listeners. If you like what you hear, you can follow us on Facebook and Twitter at EISTPOD for updates. And to get notified when new episodes of both Enterprising Individuals and Discoverage are released. And you can tweet to us on the show by using the hashtag Discoverage or email us at EISTPOD@gmail.com. And while you're on the internet, why not head to your listening platform of choice and subscribe to our show feed, give us a rating and a review, and it really helps us out. And if you want to help the show grow, stop by our Patreon page at patreon.com/EISTpod. And as always, if you like the show, tell a friend. Discoverage will return on December 3rd, next week, for the 8th episode of Season 3 of Star Trek Discovery, entitled The Sanctuary, which will feature the return of the very smooth Orions and Rin, the Andorian, from the episode Scavengers. We'll be here next Thursday to cover it. We'll be going live once again at 7 p.m. Central, so join us then. You can follow us on Twitter or Facebook at EISTpod to get notified when we are live and broadcasting. And in the meantime, why not check out our main show, Enterprising Individuals, at enterprisingindividuals.com. Every Wednesday on the show, I and a special guest discuss in excruciating detail a selected episode from a Star Trek series. We also have news from the Trek sphere and interviews with special guests. Our latest episode just dropped, and on it, I'm joined by Will Wen, the Star Trek communist, and we discuss the capitalism and communism that we see in the world of Star Trek and the Star Trek universe. You can hear that episode at enterprisingindividuals.com or wherever you get your podcasts. Ella, thanks as always for joining me to talk about tonight's episode of Star Trek and remind people where they can find you online.
My pleasure. My podcast is called Generations Geek. It's on a mini hiatus, which, gives you some time to catch up. So sure. We are Generations Geek, wherever you listen to podcasts and on all social media.
Awesome. And you can find me at K-A-1-I-B-A-N on Twitter. Also, you can find all the shows on the Just Enough Trope Network at Just Enough Trope on Twitter. And that is it for us. We are signing off. Thanks for listening. This is Aaron for Ella saying live long and prosper.